Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to the official Dom J Radio Show. Yeah. On this episode, I'll be speaking with an oil and gas industry expert on what we can expect for the rest of the year from that market, give my review on Jordan Peele's latest thriller, Nope, and of course, the thought of the week. Be sure to like, share, and subscribe to Official Dom J Radio on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's good, Official Dom J Radio listeners? It's your boy, Agent Jerry, stopping by to let you know Dom love the podcast, man.
In entertainment, one of the more fun events I recently attended was the Nope movie at a dinner movie theater. Insofar as the movie experience and that aspect of it, I thought Keke Palmer stole the show from an audience and comedic perspective. She really brought the laughs, and you'd almost thought she was going to get a standing ovation from the very beginning. People were just so excited to see her on the big screen again. So I thought that was obviously a great casting aspect there. Daniel Kaluuya as well nailed that whole, how I feel it was, a reserved expressionist role. And I thought by today's standards, it was a great thriller movie. And to really hit that marker, I feel like they don't need to show gore. I know gore is sort of its own category when we're talking like scary movies or thrillers, but some thrillers really skirt that line about, you know, the suspense they're in, or is it thrilling enough insofar as it being carried by the protagonist and antagonist relationship there. So I saw an interview with Jordan Peele where he was discussing essentially the ability, or the need to rather, have the audience and their imagination be allowed to run rampant, and how that's truly the most terrifying thing imaginable. And I thought that was enlightening, because it's true. It's the difference between, obviously, you know, he went on to further sort of describe when you see the monster on screen, like after they've been revealed in Scooby-Doo or something like that, it's less of okay, you know, I'm still as terrified, more so as okay, I can put a face to it, if you will, to sort of get a better understanding of, you know, what it is that's chasing and terrorizing everybody, versus that suspense that's truly built from not seeing this person or this entity for quite some time. I don't want to get into any spoilers or anything like that, so if you haven't seen it, you should have been seeing it, especially if you're part of the culture in that sense, man. What you waiting on? Definitely worth going to see. I took my wife and little sister. We had the whole dinner theater experience, which I thought was pretty fly. Something I haven't done too many times. I've done it over the years, just here and there, but you never know what you're going to get with the next theater experience. But I thought the movie, 9 out of 10, one of my favorite people imaginable died. And so for that reason, I couldn't give it the full 10 out of 10, even though some might see that's just me being petty. And from the dinner movie perspective, definitely a 10 out of 10, man. So definitely shout out to the movie grill experience there. Good food and a good movie is definitely hard to beat if you're trying to get drunk or have desserts to really top it off or add an extra layer. They can satiate and satisfy that need as well. So if you haven't seen Nope, definitely go and check that out. And if you have already, how did you feel about the movie? What were your thoughts on it? Are you a Jordan Peele fan? I know some people, despite the man's success, you know, may not be in the thriller movie, so it may not be for you. But if you've seen it, let me know what you think. On today's episode of the Official Dom J Radio Show, I am honored to have one of my closest brothers from another mother joining us, a gentleman that is an engineer and an expert in the oil and gas industry, a connoisseur of all the finer things life has to offer, and a Second Amendment enthusiast like myself, Christopher Reynolds, a.k.a. Billy D. Williams. How you doing today, bro?
Wonderful, man. Definitely appreciate you having me.
Hey, man, thank you for taking the time out of your schedule to be here to join us on the show today. But I know you just celebrated a birthday. We were talking before, you know, before we were recording and after. How'd your birthday go? Happy belated, man. Many blessings to you and the family.
Yeah, appreciate it. Man, it was great, man. Surrounded by family. Just, taking in the times and blessed to still be here and keep it kicking.
That's real, bro. That's real, man. Taking it one day at a time, man. But how you feeling, bro? How you feeling? Just a temperature check-in. It's something I've seen people doing before, so I think I'm going to start incorporating that into my check-ins. How you feeling?
Oh, man, I'm feeling great, you know? It's a time to be alive, man. We got a lot of stuff going on out there. It's a lot of folks feel, uneasy, you know? But I say, man, the best thing to do to keep grinding is to make sure that you keep solid people in your life, man. That's one of the best things that you can do, and kind of surround yourself with as much truth as you possibly can.
Yeah, I feel you, man. I find myself trying to lock in, like you're saying, in that aspect and still keep it 100 and have the circle keeping it 100 has really been like just one of the ways a brother has gotten through these last 2 or 3 years, man. Trying not to get distracted, discouraged, any of it, because it'd be a lot of BS going on.
Absolutely, man. I'm telling.
Yeah, man. But hey, man. Like I said, I know you're an expert. You're an LSU grad. You know, shout out to the alma mater and whatnot. All pleasantries aside, there, man. But what the hell is up with these gas prices, man? They've been up. They've been down. They've been all over the place. What's going on in your industry, bro? Crucial to our everyday life. Tell us about it.
Well, I mean, the first thing I can tell you is that we really shouldn't be surprised about the gas prices. Man, we're at war. I mean, even if we're not shooting any shells out off the coast of Florida or anything, we're in a position to where Russia, one of the largest oil and gas producers, is kind of shut off from the rest of the world. And so it's pretty much got the entire petrochemical industry in a frenzy, and they're trying to compensate. So your rates are going up everywhere across the world, and they're pretty much trying to figure out how to meet demand with such a large chunk missing. It's kind of its own little pandemic for the oil industry. So we can't really look at what it is that we're doing here to try to find some blame for that. I mean, it's as far as your major oil and gas companies in the United States, a lot of them are basically investing in themselves. And I know they talk about some of these companies having massive profits. And, you know, that's not anything unheard of with oil and gas industry, right?
Right.
But it is more the fact of when they take those profits, how much are they putting back into the business? Well, if they have to increase production the way that they've been doing these past, 2 years, because the pandemic threw a lot of stuff off, right?
Yeah.
Now the fact that Russia's missing, they're putting all these profits right back into the business. And that means they have to run all of their units at max rates. They have to gather as much crude as they can from some unconventional areas around the world. And they have to process it twice as fast. And for them to do that, and that costs money. So even though we're seeing a massive increase in profits, that doesn't necessarily mean that everybody's taking a briefcase of cash home, you know?
Now that's enlightening. I hadn't thought about that, but it makes sense. I feel like everything else has sort of been tied in, the whole job situation, the supply chain issues. So it would make more sense then that having a war and having a big supplier in that industry, like you're saying, not be a participant, is causing this sort of trickle down effect, if you will, or fucking domino effect, for lack of better terms.
Absolutely, and you said it right there. It's the fact of a lot of these businesses, they decided they wanted to play it a bit conservative when the pandemic happened, and then once the pandemic ended, you know, they went full throttle. You know, they held back a lot of businesses. Let's see what the term is. Projects. They held back a lot of projects, and they didn't spend the way that they needed to. But then once production had picked up, once there was a lot more traveling, once people were back out on the road, once concerts and shows and holidays were all back in full effect, everybody wanted to get back out on the road. So you're talking about demand hit a pretty high point at a pretty quick route. And what happened was that, you know, now that we have all this demand, we have to figure out how to be able to supply for these people. And once that got rolling, then bam, Russia got to the position that they were in, and they shut off their oil gates, and now everybody's trying to figure out how to compensate for that. So it's all one big thing. And when it comes to what you do with the petrodollar, it is a global thing. It's not an American thing. It's not a Venezuelan thing. It's not any individual nation like Saudi Arabia, anything else. It's all one big package together.
Yeah. So there's really, with it being a war, essentially, and that being a critical component of it, there's really no, I feel like, definitive end in sight. I mean, is that a reach by saying that? Because I know the like pandemic is over to certain degrees and in certain ways, but it's not technically over. It seems like it's rolled into an inflation / recession simultaneously. And so with the war outlook, is it just going to be more of the same in that capacity?
So not necessarily. So okay. The pandemic is moving more towards what we call an endemic. We're looking at it to where enough of the population have been exposed to COVID. When you do see the sicknesses of it right now, it's not as severe as it was obviously in the beginning. You have people that are getting COVID for their second, third, fourth, I've even heard fifth time. And it's something that is actually a little more manageable, if that makes sense. We can't necessarily say whether these vaccines are absolutely doing something, you know. And that's why I'm no medical doctor, so I'm not going to
preface the show right there that we are not medical experts.
I'm not going to put any words in anybody's mouth, but
right.
We've seen enough of a combination of things happening to where we're recognizing at the end of the day we are effectively fighting against this thing. And really, if anything, my doctor tells me it all has to do with time. With enough exposure, this virus will reach an endemic and it will hit the population in a way to where, you know, things just simply won't be as bad. But then also, when it comes to the oil and gas industry, with the demand being so high, it doesn't necessarily mean that demand is getting higher and higher each week. What's happening is that when there's production from all of these major 5-10 oil companies around the world, with them increasing their production, and that includes all of your American companies, Saudi Arabia, OPEC, any of these types of nations, since they're increasing their production, they're going to meet the demand. And actually, as of right now, production is beyond demand. That's why you're actually seeing a bit of a price drop right now.
Right. Yeah, I appreciate it. I mean, it's the sort of tilting scale, I feel like, kind of going back and forth to a degree, and we're sort of just having to ride the wave. Because like you're saying, it's not a isolated incident as much as it is a global incident. And being in the midst of a war ultimately just has to complicate that another degree or two or three.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, we will see some relief from this. This isn't the first time it's happened. Sometimes we have a short memory of these things, but there was a point in time in the past where gas was up at about $5 a gallon, but it didn't last too long. And we need to have a little bit of faith. I know I sound like, you know, I'm in the pocket of some of these businesses, but we need to have a little faith with understanding that oil and gas companies want to make profit for a very long time. They're not looking for a get-rich-quick scheme. They want to make sure that they're able to make the money that they need to make in long-term and continuously reinvest in their business so, you know, they can turn those kinds of profits years down the line.
Right.
Basically, churning out as much as they can to do anything in the short term is absolutely against what they're doing. So they're looking at the long term. They're looking at the next 10 to 15 to 20 years. And they also are looking into the transition from oil and gas to alternative fuels. And if you really look at it, they are pretty much meeting exactly the demand that they need to transition into that. So let's not look at it and just believe that oil and gas companies are just poaching that petrodollar and they're trying to get as much as they can out of it. That's technically not what's happening. A lot of folks on the political side, a lot of folks on the, and look, I even say, even our president is saying, and I'm definitely not blaming Joe Biden. I'm not a political person in any way. I don't feel Biden versus Trump or any of that type of conversation is even necessary. But we do want to factor in that at the end of the day, presidents don't necessarily know about this stuff either. And I know that sounds a little crazy, like they have economists that kind of stand there and tell them what's going on. But a lot of that always does have to do with some type of political agenda that goes beyond what the American person is looking for. So if we do subtract all that and we look at the bare bones of it, we need to recognize that this is an issue that is global and that we have to do everything we can as all businesses together in terms of how our economy flows to solve it so that people can stay on the road, people can get gas to go to work, people can take care of their children, get to their jobs, do everything it is they need to do.
Right.
And poaching the system, it's just not going to work. It's not an effective thing overall, and we have to kind of calm ourselves and make sure that we understand that every business definitely needs profit, but every business needs to operate in the long term, not just in the short term. And that's what these companies are doing right now.
No, that's a great point. I find myself thinking of myself as a business, as Jay-Z would, you know, suggest everyone should. I'm not a businessman. I'm a business, man. You know what I'm saying? In that sense, I find one of the ways I do myself that favor is by staying my ass at the house as much as possible. Because I find out if you leave the house, it will get expensive on you hella quick.
That is true. And if you have anything that deals, that drinks 93 octane, it's not fun at all.
I can only imagine, man. I've seen some screenshots, bro. I'm on that 89 most times, even though I just got the new whip. But boy, oh boy, at the peak of all of this, maybe a month and a half or so ago, I was feeling like I was getting robbed, and it was about to have me on some ski mask behavior, but I digress. Things have since, you know what I'm saying? Things have since digressed and calmed down a bit there. But you brought up a good point. The whole shift to the clean air or alternative energy initiatives, how does that sort of play into the petroleum side of it? Because I know you're saying, like, they have a sort of, I feel like, advantage in jumping on that, what feels ahead of time, even though it's probably and most realistically behind the times, if you will, for, let's say, the next 5 to 10 years. I know everybody's got a number of it, of initiatives they've kicked off since the president sort of put his own out there for, you know, a certain duration of people can meet it by 2030 or something crazy like that. So how does that sort of impact where we are now?
Well, I guess the first thing is I want to give that disclaimer again. I am right. Not of any political affiliation.
This is not a political podcast.
I'm wear a blue or red tie when it comes to this.
Yeah.
But I do want everybody to be cautious that when it comes to the market that we have here in this country and around the world, we don't want to force things. Things happen more naturally, and as they happen naturally, as certain people make decisions, say whether they're at the dealership looking to buy an electric vehicle or a V8 5.7 ME truck. At the end of the day, we can't force that decision, because if we do, we're going to see some irregular offsets in the market, and we're going to almost start digging ourselves into a deeper hole. So when it comes to that politically, hey, we definitely want to ensure that the transition is smooth. We definitely want to make sure that as we do this, that we don't shoot ourselves in the foot. I think that's a very proper term to say right now. We don't want to shoot ourselves in the foot, meaning that as we do transition to this, that we make sure that we do it the way it's supposed to be done. And that literally means that every individual that walks to the dealership, or the two dealerships, they're looking at the Tesla dealership, and we're using Tesla as an example, but what's happening is that Tesla was used as a major company to set off the EV market, and it's done so. It's done so effectively, and now it's got a couple champions that are rising around it that are becoming very effective EV companies, but our top auto manufacturers right now, they are in the position to where they can push out their electric vehicles. Yeah, I think we saw Chevy produce, a Chevy Spark and a few other vehicles that, you know, they kind of hit very specific markets, but they weren't the vehicles that everybody wanted. As people are recognizing, or as the industry is recognizing, that people are going to the dealership and they're making more conscious choices, it allows them to introduce vehicles that they've had in the bag for a while. It's not like they have to figure out how to come up with these things, because automakers, they want to keep making money long term as well.
Right, they're in 5-year plan, 10-year plans with these rollouts.
They can start producing, or they can start presenting these vehicles that they've had, you know, on the drawing board for a while, and they can allow people to make a conscious decision. But if our government feels that they want to almost force it by giving, say, an ultimatum saying we're gonna have nothing but electric vehicles by the year 2025, that's not the safest thing to do. Because what's going to happen is that you're going to have a resistance in the market. The supply will be there, the demand may not be there. You're going to have people that will refuse it. You ever had a conversation with somebody who says, there's no way in hell I'm driving the Tesla because I just like the feel of a V8 motor. I just like the feel of that twin turbo, you know. Those people still exist. And if you attempt to force it, what's going to happen is that you're going to get a large amount of supply and the demand will not be there. And one of the things that a lot of people don't talk about when it comes to an EV is that the amount of carbon footprint it takes to produce one electric vehicle with batteries and all, it takes about 5 years of a gas combustible engine to run, meaning the general lifespan of a vehicle, we actually do label it as 5 years, right? Or 120,000 miles. After that, you're talking about the carbon footprint of that one EV vehicle coming off the assembly line is equivalent to 5 years of a combustible engine running. So what that means is that if you want all of a sudden put 4 million EV vehicles out on the market, it's equivalent to 5 years of 4 million combustible engines there in the field immediately. That's a big, huge carbon footprint. And that's something that we have to figure out how to compensate for if we're talking about working with the environment. That's not a productive thing. Batteries are expensive too. So it's the price factor of it and the carbon footprint that we have to recognize. If we attempt to force this, we're going to be pushing a lot more carbon out to the industry, out to the world than what we're supposed to. That's not good.
And that's ironic when you're thinking of the switch from, like you're saying, the whole gasoline movement to an alternative energy source. If it en route to trying to make that the status quo, it shits on the environment. I doubt that's how they envision that project playing out.
I mean, look, we're very young with this alternative fuels.
Right.
It is something that the world wants to do, you know. And I tell people, man, don't think oil and gas industry, the oil and gas industry are trying to do this as well. You know, we've heard that Chevron and Exxon and all of them are starting to slow down their oil exploration. They're looking for more alternative fuels. We're hearing these things from them. They have to be light years ahead to be able to make sure that they continue to make their profits. And we do understand that the world is actively searching for alternative energies.
Right.
We have to recognize that right now, the solar panel 20 years ago versus right now, it's not even close to being the same. You have a lot more efficiency, a lot more effectiveness than what it is. But what happened was that a massive amount of industry decided to get into this, including companies like Tesla. These Tesla solar panels, these things are magnificent compared to any type of solar panel that they've had before. The efficiency is so much greater. But now that we're looking at being able to, I guess, master solar, we still have a little way to go, but we're getting to that point, and it's making it a little more effective to be able to use it.
Mm-hmm.
It's still expensive, so we haven't standardized it yet. But we are looking at being able to transition the effectiveness of solar to the industry to where it actually becomes a reasonable thing, both on the carbon footprint side and the price side, to be able to get solar and use it effectively to push energy back into the market, because that's what happens when you get these Tesla solar panels. But now that we're doing that, it's making solar an effective way to be able to use alternative fuels for our advantage. Can't really say that for wind power yet. Those turbines, I guess they look pretty. They will beat the shit out of a bird, I can tell you that. These things running to a bird is not going to be nice. And
yeah,
then
that's
the way that these blades are produced and the material that they are, you can't really recycle them too well. So you're talking about landfills that can pop up with these things if they don't become, or if they don't produce what they're supposed to produce within the lifespan of where they're at. So now you're talking about a potential loss if these things don't produce energy from this wind power over X amount of time. But the thing is that it doesn't mean we shouldn't be looking at wind power. It just means we have to figure out how to make it more effective. And the same thing with hydropower. Same thing with, what else do we have out there? Nuclear. I think nuclear is a very important one that we need to talk about.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I just saw on TikTok, not to just sort of cut you off there, but a water-powered engine. And I don't know why that was like a mind-blowing concept to me, but I feel like something that if the wrong person creates that and it picks up any sort of momentum or steam, we're going to find that person RIP'd shortly thereafter, it seems like.
Hey, so look, I'm definitely not going to... I'm not going to touch the conspiracy side of that with a 10-foot pole, you know, but... I am saying at the end of the day, from what I've seen and heard about these engines doing what they're doing, it sounds amazing. Yeah. And it really does take a pioneering type of, I'm not going to say individual, not an Elon Musk type of person, but a business to be able to perfect this and skyrocket into the future. Now, the one thing that I do know about anything that's water powered is that we do want to make sure that corrosives and things like that stay out of the system. So right. When it comes to that, it's a purity type of factor. And usually when it comes to purity, we have to ask ourselves, how effective would an individual be with repairing that? Meaning, can you standardize the technology to where it becomes an effective thing that people can use?
Right, your average Joe could, if it breaks down or has an issue, could repair it in that sense, yeah.
Yeah. And if they can't, well then, what's the cost of XYZ company taking that service off of the average consumer's hands? So, I mean, don't get me wrong. I love the idea of it. I haven't really done a lot of the, mechanical thermal system side of it. I haven't mm-hmm. done too much of that research. But from what I have looked at, these things are possible. It's just more of the standardization of it and the overall maintenance, whether that's something that could actually happen. Now, look, I'm hoping, I'm praying that, somebody like Elon Musk, or maybe, get like a black version of that somewhere, somebody comes along.
Somebody for us.
Somebody tries to take on this technology and be able to figure out how to put it out in the world. Because the thing is that if there are water-powered engines, if there are I use hydropowered engines, because the thing is, it may not just be tap water that you're using. It could be some type of deionized water, something that would be able to burn a little cleaner than just water, right? Boil a little cleaner. But the idea is that if we're able to produce something like that, we need to figure out how to be able to put it out in the market. And the one thing I will say, regardless of the conspiracies and whatnot, when it comes to us as human beings that have TikTok, that have Instagram, that have Wikipedia, that have unlimited access to this wide world of internet, man, let's get some folks together and figure this out. Like, I'm always going to be optimistic towards that side. I say, man, we're LSU alumni. Man, let's get LSU on something like this. Let's get some young scientists that really want to tackle this and see how they can bring this to the market. That's what's the most exciting thing about all this alternative fuel thing, is that there are unlimited options right now, as long as we're able to think it.
Mm. No, man, I'm here for it. I think that's the best thing about the continual envelope pushing, if you will, is just continuing to look at alternative options, never thinking that there's just the one way of doing it and this is the way it has to be. It just is really, like you're saying, getting the backs and the minds behind it to make it easier for, again, a large consumer base. So whatever that would look like, I would love if our alma mater took their hands on something like that. But regardless, I'd like to see it come to fruition, just for the sense of, I feel like it's a way of propelling things forward. Alternative Absolutely. Energies are here to stay. So, hey, that's, without crashing a market or trying to force everyone to do it, let's at least get to a point where we know the research is as sound as it could be for your average Joe to then say, all right, well, let's start rolling these vehicles out.
And the one thing is kind of like we were just talking about, it's really going to take a combination of these things. I don't think there's going to be one solid alternative. We do right. like to think batteries might do that in some sense, but perfecting the efficiency of a battery, that is a long-term thing. That's going to take a lot of trial and error, and it's going to be something that will take years to be able to make sure that we perfect. When I'm talking about that, I mean something in lines of space exploration, something on lines of,
I was going to say, a lot of blow-ups like NASA.
Let's not repeat too many of those Apollo mess up missions, but it's more the fact of, it's going to take folks to get out there to really figure these things out, to mm-hmm. test them, and to perfect them. And like I said, look, I'm not the biggest Elon Musk fan, but I will say, people like him, people like Jeff Bezos, these billionaires that are deciding to spend their money on specific types of innovation for the world, I know a lot of folks shit on them because, we're not paying too many Amazon people the wage that we think they should be having.
Right.
But they are reinvesting their fortunes into something that is going to actually supposed to be sufficient for the world over time. And I know we sometimes lose sight of that because sometimes we want to think about what's right in front of us, but the rest of us are here to do that. You know, I encourage people, if you feel some kind of way about somebody investing a couple $100 billion into a space exploration program, well, hey, let's dedicate a couple weekends to doing something with the ocean. You know, and I've sat and talked with people that do that. I sit and talk with people who talk about the major issues that we have. You know, don't get me wrong, I am all excited about space exploration, but I do understand that we've probably discovered less than 30% of our own oceans. And then, right. Actually, I'm thinking it's much less than that.
That's what I'm saying. Probably around 10 to 15, I imagine. It always feels like a very minuscule number for being present in 2022.
Yeah, a very small amount of our own oceans we've been able to discover. And it's not that we're not working on this stuff, but it's just not on the front page of CNN or Fox News or whatever it is they talk about, because I don't watch any of these things.
Right. That's real, man. Well, I appreciate you stopping by the show, man, and dropping some gems. I think, ultimately, I feel like it's, like you're saying, in the consumer's hands. There are a number of alternatives to not only be interested in, but to get behind and seeing how can I be a part of the movement, how can I advance it further in any small manner. And so really just finding which one is the one you think would be best and sort of making that maneuver for the next vehicle. It won't be me doing it anytime soon, because like I said, I just got that big truck, that big thing last year, so that's what I'm riding in for the next few years. But overall, I can definitely support the movement and see the use of the alternatives there, man. But where can the people find you, man? What's next for you, bro?
That's the thing. We'll be seeing pretty soon. I've got a few things under my belt or under the hood of my vehicle. I haven't decided to fully expose yet, but right. You know, man, I'll put it this way. I hate to make it sound like it's a movement, because I think that's kind of the way I've been going with this conversation, but it's like, man, I really want this next generation of folks, man. Look, I'm gonna tell you, being young and black in this country, it's a blessing right now. I know people say that shouldn't be, but when I say it's a blessing, I mean that we have more freedom to interact with each other at this point. Young black folks in this country have such a blessing to be able to do so with the amount of resources that they have at their fingertips. No generation of us in this country before have had that ability to do so. Let's take that power, let's harness it, and let's do something for the future that's going to be extremely productive for our people and for the rest of the world. Which, you know, for our people as well. It's something that's important. And you don't see me out there doing that stuff, man. I'm going to be in public schools. I'm going to be having conversations with the youth. I'm going to be recruiting folks to get not just the LSU. I didn't go to an HBCU. I'm a big fan of them, you know?
Right.
I want us to utilize our universities. I want us to put some of our kids in there. And also, I'm not just talking about college as well. We need to get some of our kids in some of these trade schools. We need to teach some of these young black folks how to be able to make money and be able to enjoy their lives and not just slave away at situations that seem like they're almost dead end. Because I'm going to tell you, that old American dream, almost dead end at this point.
Hey, man, that's real talk. And I think a great point for us to wrap on right there, that old American dream is dead on. Dead ass, deaded, however you want to phrase it, for the next generation. It's all about innovation. I'm here for
Absolutely.
It. Definitely here for it. Well, Chris, man, again, thank you for your time today. Thank you for stopping by the show. And we'll definitely obviously be in touch, because we fuck with each other in real life. One of my closest compadres, my partners. But again, thank you for stopping by the show, man. Really appreciate you dropping the jewels on us.
All right, man. Thank you for having me, man.
Yes, sir.
Remember, future's in your hands. Somebody's hands. Our hands. It's on
all of us. The thought of the week for this episode is just this: finding alignment. It's never a purely lateral move. Instead, it varies like the macro, the universe at large. Like constellations, it staggers. I felt this even in periods of life that seem to stand still. I feel well grounded. Or looking at it from this perspective: writers write, editors edit. If I, as I found myself in moments, overspend my time editing instead of writing, I'm out of alignment. An excuse for delays of sorts, but it's one where you're better off trying to refine it. Hire the editor. If as an editor, you focus on creating script content instead of editing, you're being a writer. And that's just the relative points that I found it for myself. So in whatever field that you truly pursue, just make sure that you're finding alignment. That could be personal, that could be professional. Because if you think about it, and that's something that I've grown to understand as I've gotten more in tune with my own body, trying to stretch and do yoga, which is something I would love to commit to, but don't have the patience or the want to in all times to really engage in it with a level of consistency. But it's one where I find when I do have periods of, you know, focused yoga, or at least the efforts to try and have it, because the wife is so keen on it, I find myself in those moments understanding my body more, feeling where I'm out of alignment. If my back feels a certain way when I move to the left or to the right, or if I'm stretching and I feel like I don't have full rotation in a limb or on my neck or something of that, it's easier to see in those parts, because again, that's recognizing oneself out of alignment. Recentering and resetting, I find to be the times that are so key, that help, I feel like, make what could be bigger situations not as cumbersome. It means being able to contain, or as some like to see, compartmentalize. And I think that's a different way of finding that alignment, in the sense of continuing to grow and be able to put things in its proper place and context. Finding alignment can be a journey. And I think that's a part of the bigger scheme, or however you'd like to think of it, because again, it's from the macro perspective, and just applying it at a more micro level to oneself, it takes some compassion. You have to be compassionate to yourself. There are going to be these speed bumps, there are going to be these moments where you're clearly not where you're meant to be, and sometimes those are the moments that can cost us the most, but they can also be our greatest learning experience and opportunities. And so again, that's in the sense of not taking every L just purely as an L, but taking it as a lesson. Finding moments where you may feel like you're in your lowest valley, but finding that it can often be the same moment in which you feel a blessing. Because you know what's around the corner. You've been here before 9 times out of 10. If you've been where I've been, then you realize the sun shall rise again. So continue on that journey. Continue trying to find alignment. Thought of the week. And just like that, episode 35 of Official Dom J Radio is in the books. A special thank you to my guest, my brother from another mother, Christopher Reynolds, aka Billy D. Williams. Thank you for stopping by, my bro, dropping absolute gems on us. Always good catching up and having those sorts of people in your circle, being able to really, you know, feel enlightened after conversations. And hell, we chopped it up longer off record than we did on record, bro. So that's always a pleasure. So appreciate your time and energy there. As always, y'all, in the meantime, in between time, stay blessed, mind your business, and get plenty of rest. And stay hydrated too. You already know that's imperative. Summer is not over. The heat is still out here heating. The sun being one of the hardest working entities, working 12-hour shifts minimum every single day. So you got to do your part in staying hydrated, man. And until the next time, peace. Be sure to like, share, and subscribe to Official Dom J Radio on all streaming platforms. I'm out.